action. Hey there, movie kings and queens. Welcome to episode 45 of the Real Gay Movie Show. I'm your host, Mike Lovins, and with me, as always, is a guy that, like Mary Poppins, just keeps returning, my co-host, Ryan Provost.
Oh, yay.
Which I'm glad that you do.
I was going to say, hopefully I return as Emily Blunt someday. We'll see.
There are worse things to return as, I suppose.
Correct. Get to be married to John Krasinski.
That ain't bad.
Right?
That ain't bad. Well, Ryan, before we get into newsreel,
yeah,
you saw Roma.
I did.
Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about what you thought of it?
Well, a few quick thoughts.
Okay.
One, I actually, even though it got released on Netflix, I chose to see it in a movie theater because something about a black and white foreign language drama made me think I would have a hard time paying attention to it
on TV.
I was just watching it at home.
Fair.
So I made a point to go see it in a movie theater, and I went to the it's at the Gateway. I love the Gateway. Hadn't been in a while.
You haven't had an excuse to go pay for a movie,
right,
for a while.
So it was nice to go support the Gateway. I love that place. So
support the Gates,
right? And their ways. But it was, I'll say this, it's definitely a very strong movie. You can tell that Alfonso Cuarón put a lot of care and love and heart into it. It feels like a passion project,
okay,
kind of movie. There are some scenes that are very striking and will bring you, brought me close to tears, and I am an emotionless vessel. So that should say something. But it's not the movie for me necessarily.
Okay.
I texted you.
I was going to say, when you told me that you saw it, you didn't think that I would have liked it.
Yeah, I texted you and I said, I don't even think you should see it because I don't think you will like it at all. And I'm not saying that to say it's a bad movie. I think it's a very well executed movie. The way it's shot is beautiful. One thing, and I just don't know how it's a personal aesthetic. I don't really care for movies shot in black and white.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't think it's a thing that should still, there are moments in this movie where I'm like, if this were in color, it would be a lot more, I don't know, even more,
yeah,
striking to me.
Well, you know, like they released Mad Max Fury Road, the Blu-ray and the digital version also came with a black and white version. They did that with Logan also. And I've heard people rave about them. And I've tried to watch them. And I'm like, it's not as good to me.
Yeah.
And I know it's an artistic thing. So,
but it almost makes it feel a little less real because it looks more like a movie when you do it that way, because that's not what life looks like. The only reason black and white ever existed in the first place was because of technical limitations. That, you know, once that went away, everyone transitioned into color. So
right.
I don't know about that artistic choice. I don't know if I thought it brought anything more to it. If anything, it may have detracted a little bit. Very well shot movie, very beautiful movie. The performance by the lead actress, who I'm not even going to try her name, I would butcher it, but she is incredible. Very, very strong performance. And like I said, some scenes are very, very heartbreaking and moving.
Yeah.
But it's just lacking a little something for me. So I'm going to give it a pretty high rating based on the artistic achievement, I believe it is. But I'm going to keep it from that four reels because I think that's four reels is for me where artistic achievement and my own personal love of movies align. And it didn't quite get there for me. So I'm going to give it 3.5 reels. It's a movie I will never watch again, but a movie that I did appreciate the artistic achievement that it is.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's for me.
I can confirm. Like, I fully believe that this movie is not for you. In fact, I don't think it's for most American audiences. I think it's for, like, film students. You know, I think it's that kind of movie that students who study film will very much appreciate, but not necessarily the rest of us.
All right. Well, glad you enjoyed it. I mean, for taking the time to go see it, to go pay for it, especially given that you could have seen it at home for free.
I wouldn't have paid attention. It would have been so difficult.
But glad you walked away enjoying it. So, all right. Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and get in a newsreel. I do have a couple quick stories, and we've got two movies to talk about again this week. So the first one is you'll know why I chose to talk about this. So speaking with Empire Magazine, John Boyega revealed that Star Wars Episode 9, is set roughly 1 year after The Last Jedi.
Okay.
Which, I mean, so Force Awakens and The Last Jedi was, like, immediate. This is still quicker, though, than, like, historically the Star Wars movies have been one into the other. I think the shortest had been, like, 3 years. I mean, there were longer spans, too. But I'm glad that there's at least a little bit of time elapsed.
Sure.
I kind of wished it had been a little bit more. I would have liked to have seen maybe Rey have some more time to study more Jedi skills and stuff like that, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm glad it's not immediately after. Yeah. I'm glad it's sometime after, and I kind of predicted it. I thought that would make the most sense anyway. So I don't know. I'm more excited when a little bit more juicy news comes out. Like, when they release a title, which if it's like the last movie would happen here in the next month or two, that's when I'll start to really get excited. Because we'll get to dissect every syllable of the title.
And people, you know, we will.
Mike will. This title had four syllables. That's odd for the third movie of it.
Right.
But yeah. So that's when it'll get a little more fun for me.
Yeah. We're officially just now under, like, a couple days under a year till it comes out. So we're at that time for stuff to start rolling in, and celebrations in April. So, all right. Now this one I actually kind of picked a little bit for you, but I think, other people might enjoy this story. So Anchorman director Adam McKay, who recently did Vice, has revealed that he has held talks with Marvel about possibly replacing James Gunn as the director for Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Okay.
So I really kind of was curious to get your thoughts on that. I know you love Will Ferrell and Anchorman, and but neither of us have seen Vice yet, but we've heard some stuff about it. But but he's done really well with the other things that he's done too, and I think that there is a fair amount of people who did enjoy Vice. So do you think that he's a good choice for Guardians?
I think the best choice for Guardians is James Gunn.
Absolutely.
I think if you're gonna stick with your guns, no pun intended, and move on to a different director, I think Adam McKay is a great choice, because he gets, I think with the Guardians movies, what makes them great is they balance the comedy very well with the action, dramatic, Marvel-y aspects of it. And I think that is a skill that Adam McKay probably has in spades. And so I think that would be a good fit.
Yeah. Yeah. If that's the direction that they go, I think I'd be okay with that. Especially if it holds true that they are using James Gunn's script.
Sure. Sorry, I didn't realize you were waiting for a reaction from me.
No, you're good. You're good. All right, moving on to the movie. So the two movies that we saw this week are Aquaman and Mary Poppins Returns.
Yes.
So let's go ahead and start with Aquaman, even though Mary Poppins Returns technically came out first. I saw Aquaman first, so I'm deciding that's what we're doing first.
I saw Mary Poppins first, but Aquaman is first alphabetically, so...
There you go. There Perfect.
We go. Yeah.
I think most people know, whether you're a comic book fan or not, I think most people out there know who Aquaman is. This is the current iteration of Aquaman, though, that's been in, I guess... Batman, no, so he was not in Batman v Superman, so
he had that little like file
that's
scene.
Right, yeah. So Justice League was the first like full-on performance of Aquaman that we had,
correct?
And then this is his first movie. So directed by James Wan, who he did the Conjuring movies,
yeah, and directed the first Saw.
Yep. And Did he do more than one of the Fast and Furious movies?
I am not sure.
Okay. I know he at least did one.
Yes.
Initial thoughts. What'd you think?
Okay. Let me give some preface. So, okay. First of all, this movie was one of my least anticipated of the year.
Yeah.
So I was not necessarily looking forward to it. And with these two movies that we saw this week, I had a very busy work schedule, with it being, you know, the weekend before Christmas. So it was hard for me to squeeze these movies in. In fact, I saw this one at a very late showing on a Saturday night after a very long night of work. So I may have been a little tainted anyway going in. Like, as soon as I sat down in the theater, I was like, I want to be in bed. I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
And so with that, I will say I hated this movie.
Did you?
so much.
Oh, wow.
I hated everything about it. I never go into a movie wanting to hate a movie. You know,
sure.
I go in wanting to... If it's a movie like this where I'm not looking forward to it, I want to be surprised in a good way.
But I think you went into this expecting to hate it.
I was, and yeah. It met my expectations.
See,
know?
There you go. So it wins.
No. I despise this movie.
Wow.
Okay, Aquaman was my least favorite character in Justice League. I hated that. I hate that portrayal. I hate that the
bro.
Way, not just a bro, like he seems like the worst type of frat guy. Like, I don't like Jason Momoa. I don't think he's particularly talented. I don't think he's attractive. Like he looks very smelly to me. Doesn't he look like he smells bad?
I guess I could see that.
They even make a joke about it.
Yeah,
in
they
the
do.
Movie.
They do.
He looks very smelly, and I get it that he has abs and pecs and shit, but he looks smelly, and I don't like that, Mike. I don't find him attractive. I don't find him charismatic. He seems like that cocky piece of shit. Okay, so you know how when you go to the gym and you always see like the same, no matter what time of day you go, like you'll see the same person there, and sometimes they're not even working out, they just hang out at the gym. He strikes me as that kind of human who you just always see at the gym, just chilling, hanging out. It's like, don't you have other things to do? And the way they portray this character very much in line with that type of person. I hate it. I hate it so much. I hated having a full movie about it.
Skipping ahead to your no, ma'am.
I mean, God, I hate this movie. I didn't like the tone of the movie.
Okay.
I feel like it wanted to take itself. It wanted to take itself more seriously than I think it should have. But where it did try to make jokes and be light, I thought it was bad.
Okay.
I didn't like the jokes. Again, because it seemed like frat boy humor to me. It didn't, like, Aquaman calling someone a dick. Ooh, funny. Like, it's, oh, God.
It's funny because Pete literally said the same thing. Like, called out that specific line, too. Like, so, give me my opinion real quick. I enjoyed the movie. I liked it. I had fun with it. The bro stuff didn't bother me as much as it did you or Pete, but it, I will say that I it did get a little tiresome. It got a little old. It certainly didn't bother me as much as it bothered you guys. I thought coming off of Justice League, I actually liked him better in this one than in that. I felt like they actually kind of toned down though the broiness compared to how he was in Justice League. I just rewatched Justice League and I was like, man, he's a little, I just thought he was a little bit more, more douchey in that than he was in this movie. But I enjoyed the, I mean, the special effects were amazing. At least I thought so. I loved all of the underwater stuff. I thought that, I do think that, Nicole Kidman was kind of underutilized. Like, I feel like maybe a lesser actress probably could have been, fit more in that role. But, overall, I liked it better than I thought I would.
Where would you rank it on the DC extended universe movies we have so far? So we have, Man of Steel,
yeah.
Suicide Squad, Batman v Superman, Justice League, and Wonder Woman. And then this, I think those are the six, unless I'm missing one.
Well, right now, it's probably three or four for me. I guess.
Really?
Man of Steel first, Wonder Woman is second. I don't know. Batman v Superman is probably number three. Well, then maybe Justice League. See, that's the thing, though, is that I think overall I like Justice League better than this one. But the stuff that they did with Superman in Justice League still just is so awful to me that it makes it hard to watch that movie. That fucking mustache. It is. It's hard to watch.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So I guess, I mean, technically it's still kind of down there, but I mean, Suicide Squad might be at the bottom of the pack, but I still enjoyed it too, to some degree. So, just because it's not at the top of the list of the DC movies doesn't necessarily mean I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah. I'll say this. I have not really enjoyed the DC movies much at all.
They're struggling.
Wonder Woman is the best for me. The rest of them have aspects that I like, but the overall execution, tone, strategy behind them, I think are bad. And that's the nicest thing I can say. It's so, especially, I mean, they played the trailer for Avengers Endgame before this movie.
Yeah.
And it just made me sad thinking about how well put together and almost nearly flawlessly executed the Marvel game plan has been for now going into over a decade.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus how much of a shit show the DC movies have been. And I think this is just another example of that. Now, okay, I'll give a little. This movie had a couple aspects I thought were fine. I thought they handled the whole underwater aspect of it, which I think was probably the highest degree of difficulty.
Yeah.
In terms of how to handle, you know, these characters interacting and talking underwater and all that. I thought they handled that pretty well. I didn't think it was egregiously awful. I wouldn't describe the special effects as amazing like you did.
Okay.
But I didn't think it was terrible. I think they handled it about as well as they could.
Now, I do have a caveat, though, with the special effects. They are not ready to take on more de-aging.
Oh, with Willem?
Well, Willem, Nicole Kidman.
Willem Dafoe, not the drag queen.
Right.
She was not in this.
Willem Dafoe. And Tamora Morrison, who played his dad.
Okay.
Like, I thought that he, at the beginning of the movie, looked like a total cutscene, video game cutscene, Uncanny Valley kind of thing. It really played with me.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of comparing to Marvel, like we had Ant-Man earlier this year, and the de-aging that they've done with Michael Douglas and what they did with Michelle Pfeiffer and what we've seen that is coming out with Samuel Jackson. I mean, they just look like they're younger people. These, to me, looked
well. The way these movies are shot, the way the DC movies are shot, is terrible. Like, they're just, there are times where it has worked, but there are times where it looks kind of cartoonish. And when you're bringing these characters to life, I mean, again, Marvel has done a really good job of really bringing their characters to life and making them feel like they're part of the real world. DC, I think, in an effort probably to distinguish itself from Marvel and not feel like they're completely ripping off Marvel, have tried to make theirs feel, yes, it's real life, but it's also very derivative of a comic book. They try to recreate some comic book looks a little bit more, I think. But still, yeah, it's just bad. And okay, you talk about Ant-Man. I think this movie was the worst possible version of a Black Panther knockoff that we could possibly have.
Okay.
So it's about someone who has the birthright to a kingdom.
Yeah.
Who is trying to assert himself over a challenger and is learning how to rule while being a superhero and trying to unite the place that should be his kingdom with the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Like,
it's from an ancient civilization that somehow has
all this advanced technology. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, it felt like a super cheap, terrible ripoff of Black Panther, where every aspect that made Black Panther an amazing movie was real bad in this. So bad.
So bad.
I mean, okay. I got to bring up something.
Okay.
Did any song stick out in this movie to you? Because there was a particular song that we talked about it with Venom and the Eminem song. I think right up there with how bad Venom song was, Ocean to Ocean by Pitbull is the main song in this movie. And it features in that song a cover of Africa.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why an Aquaman movie needs a cover of Africa in its main song?
And wasn't it when they wound up on the Sahara Desert?
For no reason. Unnecessarily so, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, that song did stick out in my head, and it was like,
it's like, why is there a cover of Africa? And not only they played that snippet, but that is part of the main song of the movie.
Yeah, and
which is sung by Pitbull.
Well, right. And given that there's been kind of a high profile cover of that song that's come out recently, it that alone then kind of just seemed weird. Like jumping on a bandwagon of the popularity of that song.
Yeah, because when I think Aquaman, I think of Africa. The African continent. God. That's the thing. We had Kendrick Lamar do the songs for Black Panther. And that that album was incredible.
Right.
Especially, I mean, All the Stars got nominated for Best Song for the Golden Globe. I assume it'll get nominated for an Academy Award as well. It's a very lovely song. And then we get the Venom song by Eminem, which was a trash song for a trash movie. And then we get this Pitbull garbage trash song for a trash movie. Oh, it's terrible. Okay, I have other holes to poke in this one.
Okay, all right.
And I'm not even at my takes yet. Mira.
Okay.
Why was her character design just a warrior meets Ariel? It literally was. She had the red hair.
Right.
And then that mermaid-like skin green suit.
Now, I have seen pictures of the comic book image of her, and it's similar. So
they should have done something to differentiate. I don't know. You can change up how someone looks from a comic to the big screen. I don't know if you've noticed, but Samuel L. Jackson's version of Nick Fury doesn't exactly look like the comic book version. He has a couple differences.
There's a little.
I just noticed we both have red socks on. That's adorable.
Oh, it's so festive. Merry Christmas.
I thought that was distracting because I really kept thinking of the Little Mermaid anytime I saw her in that kind of getup. Okay.
She did look a little Ariel-ish.
But here's something that really pissed me off. Okay. So they make this big deal about, so when they're under the water, they can swim super fast.
Right.
Crazy fast. And they have this power to where the Atlanteans, where they can, even though it's really dark when you get really deep in the water, they can see in the dark. So why,
you're going with this.
Why did they need an underwater car if they can swim so fast? And why did the underwater car have headlights if they can see in the dark?
Okay.
Like, little stupid things like that bug the shit out of me when I already am hating a movie and I hated the dialogue, so I'm looking for other things I can focus on because the lines are so cheesy and stupid and poorly delivered that I have to cling to something, but everything I try to cling to is giving. It's like when you're falling down a hill and you try to grab onto something, but the little thing you grab onto gives way and you're still falling down that hill. That's not what it felt like to me. For 2.5 hours, which was an entirely too freaking long time to have this movie it's a very, very long movie.
And did you stay for any?
I thought about leaving. Oh, you mean for anything after?
Yeah.
Oh, I did. And it was a terrible post-credit scene.
It wasn't great.
It set up nothing.
Yeah.
If you're going
to
have
probably because right now they don't have anything really to set up.
They really don't.
I mean, Shazam, but they're not anyway connected.
It was so bad, but entirely too long of a movie. And with all of that, did you see the box office results from this weekend?
I kind of perused them a little bit.
Aquaman was number one.
I saw that.
$67 million. That is $63 million more than it should have gotten. Because I assume there are $4 million worth of idiots out there. But that pissed me off that it made so much more money than Mary Poppins Returns and Bumblebee, which, as much as I don't want to see that movie, actually has really high, like, Rotten Tomatoes score.
And there's, I saw a report saying that they're considering it possibly being listed as a bomb.
Well, yeah. I mean, it only made, like, just over $20 million.
So then you... That like it might end the franchise.
So we're gonna get more Aquaman movies, but So that makes me mad. I words escape me.
I can tell this was not your favorite thing to do.
I hated this movie so much.
Do you know where Julie Andrews was in this
I have
movie?
A lot of things to say about that.
Okay.
I have a lot of things to say about that. And it goes into some discussion of of Mary Poppins Returns, because Julie Andrews does not show herself in Mary Poppins Returns. I will talk more about that later when we're talking about that movie. Okay. But she managed to play a giant fucking octopus in this.
Right.
That's garbage.
Right.
I will talk more about that, though, when we talk Mary Poppins Returns.
All right, right, right.
But yes, Julie fucking Andrews, Julie Sound of Music Andrews, got put in Aquaman to
as a voice
a giant, disgusting, gross, tentacled octoperson thing
called the Karathen. You might as well call it the Kraken. You know,
God.
All right, so I gotta do it, though. I gotta point out the Star Wars connection, but in this movie, do you know it?
That I wish that the Death Star had blown me up before I had to see this movie.
Oh my God. No.
Oh.
So the guy that played Aquaman's dad, Tamara Morrison, was Jango Fett and the clones.
I was wondering, he looked very familiar to me. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's where I knew him from.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's all I got about on that.
Okay, great. Good note.
Well, one of the other things that Pete said as we came out of this, I was like, you know, it is kind of funny because he's like, are all movies now, like any kind of alien civilization or ancient civilization, everybody has like plasma weapons?
Yeah.
He's like,
it's amazing we haven't thought of. Like, as much as we put it in movies and shit for years,
right?
We have not created any.
But like you,
that I know of,
like an underwater civilization having energy weapons like that. Like, it seems more like projectile type weapons would make more sense. Or whatever, I don't know. But we were just talking about, you know, how well Wonder Woman did with, you know, having their ancient civilization actually using swords and stuff like that. All right. Should we go ahead and get to our takes?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Let's rid ourselves of talking about this movie.
All right. What's your gayest take?
My gayest take. The only thing I can think of was that, like, not super young, not when he was like a child, but like when he was like a little bit older, the middle year Aquaman, he actually was kind of hot. And I was wondering what terrible things happened to him between that point, when he was well on his way to being a beautiful creature, to him ending up as Jason's smelly ass mimosa.
Oh my God.
Almost said mimosa.
Did you say mimosa?
I almost said mimosa because that's what I wanted while I was watching this movie. Smelly ass Jason Momoa. Like, God, I was like, oh, you poor. As I was watching, I was like, you poor thing. You don't know what's about to happen to you. Yeah.
That's funny.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Okay.
What about you? What's your gayest take, Mike?
So mine, I just want to bring up the batch of bears that wanted to take a selfie with Aquaman.
Uh-huh.
They had their pretty little pink camera phone.
I did notice. but even that, I was like, I don't know. It felt like that super, hey, wouldn't it be funny if these guys had a pink phone kind of thing?
You like, know, it's funny, though, because that's kind of what Pete said when I said that this was going to be my gayest take. And he's like, maybe they're just trying to break stereotypes.
No, they were no, it was
more making fun of.
Yes. Like it's that level of humor that I think is so
I get you.
Middle school, like, oh, these big dudes have pink phone. That funny.
Big dude, pink phone, funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. That kind of juvenile humor that does not entertain me.
Well, should I even ask your shadiest take other than it's just the movie?
I mean, it was hard for me to come up with even... No, it wasn't hard for me to come up with more shade. It was hard for me to come up with what's my shadiest shade because I had almost nothing but shade to throw at this movie. But I guess if I had to pick a shadiest take, it's that the character of Aquaman seemed invulnerable to everything. Like, what was his weakness? At what point was he threatened with any kind of physical harm at all?
Yeah, it was like something...
He seemed indestructible. He seemed more indestructible than Superman.
It was like, unless it was Atlantean steel.
Even... Did anyone even cut him with anything or stab him with anything at any point?
Yes, Manta did. When he had, at the end, then he had a sword come out that was made with Atlantean steel, and he shoved it into...
I must have stopped paying attention. But I just thought it was so silly how... And it's not even explained why, because no other Atlanteans seem to have that same power.
Invulnerability.
Yeah, they all seemed to be more easily disposed of than him. It just, it bugged me that he seemed near indestructible. Because I don't follow the Aquaman lore that right. closely, but I don't recall that being part of it. I think it was something done just to make his character seem cooler than he actually should be.
Gotcha.
So that pissed me off. I was like, why does he have super strength? He's indestructible. I don't know. It just...
Yeah, that's a stretch. I'll give you that.
Stupid.
Yeah.
It seemed very stupid.
Stupid. I don't know if I'd say it was stupid, but I understand your point.
What about you? Shade. Right. So, throw my some shade. You love this movie. This is your favorite movie of the year, so I know it's going to be hard, but throw some shade.
Having just watched Justice League again, for me, the shade is a lot of the inconsistencies between the character in that and this movie. This is supposed to take place after Justice League. It was a couple things were mentioned that happened in that movie, so we know that that's the case. But in Justice League, his eyes were like a bright blue. They were like bright yellow in this movie. In Justice League, he meets Mira. Like it, they show him like going back and forth to Atlantis a couple times, and he even wears like Atlantean armor and stuff like that, and has a conversation with Mira, like when the mother boxes get stolen. If you remember any of that, but in this movie, it makes it seem like he just meets her.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like. A lot of the conversations that he and Willem Dafoe's character had, it made it sound like that he really didn't get a chance to go down to Atlantis. Maybe he just didn't get to go down as a kid to meet his mom, but maybe he'd been down there before or whatever. I don't know. But this movie made it seem like he had never been down there until she talked him into going down. But yet in Justice League, he's wearing armor and stuff like that. And Mira's hair was not that bright red in Justice League. So they made the choice then to make her more aerial-like between Justice League and this movie.
That's the thing. It doesn't seem like there's anyone guiding this universe.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, continuity and the big picture is super important. They just go from movie to movie, and each movie is a reaction to what came before. And like in Justice League, they had the like big water bubbles so they could talk underwater.
Right.
That were so terrible that they made sure to
not do them here.
Not do that here. Everything's a reaction. Nothing is consistent. It's just a shit show.
Yeah,
it is.
Okay. Who slayed?
Nobody. Not nobody. I did not like a single performance. I almost put the dog. But even that, I mean, I don't even think it was the same dog because he was a puppy and then he got older. So I don't even know which dog to credit. But nobody. I did not like a single performance. I think even the really talented people like Willem Dafoe and Nicole Kidman were either phoning it in or not properly utilized or were given terrible dialogue. It was all bad.
Yeah.
I'm not going to shed any praise on any performance.
Nobody.
No, none.
Okay. I said Patrick Wilson.
Yeah. No. God.
So here's why I said that. I thought that at least character wise made a convincing argument about why humans need to pay for what they've been doing to the oceans. So I thought his character's motivation was good. And so I thought that he had a good performance to go along with that.
That hair was too distracting.
The hair was bad. I will 100% give you that. The hair was horrible.
I hated that youth obsessed twink blonde hair of his. It was
I wanna
gross.
Be a platinum blonde.
I wonder if they did that to make him look, because he was supposed to be Aquaman's younger brother.
Yeah.
If they did that to make him look like to de-age him some. I don't know.
Maybe.
But yeah, that hair, that like gay porn star hair was
maybe that's what I like.
Gross. That Helix Studios.
Oh God.
Fuck me teacher hair. Oh, it was gross. I didn't like it.
Okay. All right. Well, fuck my sleigh.
yep.
No, ma'am.
I almost put everybody. But I particularly want to point out how much I despise Jason Momoa. Have I not said that yet?
You don't say.
I don't like him. I can't stand this version of Aquaman. And listen, like, I loved Chris Hemsworth's Thor, even when he was the long-haired, arguably... I don't even think he looked smelly. I thought he looked like he probably showered.
So it's not all long-haired people.
No, it's not all the long-haired, hairy people. It's Jason Momoa specifically, because he carries that, I don't know, it's just that, like, unearned confidence. Like, all you've been is a character who is very quickly disposed of in Game of Thrones. Like, that's your only claim to fame before this. I don't like that characterization of Aquaman. I think that they, again, everything in this universe is a reaction. And the reaction is Aquaman is always seen as this joke of a character. You know, there's always jokes about him being made because his powers are stupid.
Right.
And so they overcompensate for that by making him this, like, and I can't do the air quotes hard enough here, but this super cool, like, frat bro who loves to drink.
Just doesn't give a fuck.
Chill and say bad words when he's not supposed to. And all that cool stuff that they do, and get tattoos all over his body, and all that shit. Like, give me a break. He seems like such a douchebag, and I don't like it.
I don't like it, he says. So mine is, I'm going to butcher the name, Yahya Abdul-Mateen.
It's actually pronounced Willem Dafoe. Okay. You pronounced that wrong. Willem Dafoe.
He was up there, but I went with the guy who played Manta.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I liked the character of Black Manta. Like, to some degree, like, I understood his motivation, the wanting revenge for Aquaman letting his dad die and stuff like that. But I just thought that this guy's acting of the character was just, I know you're going to laugh when I say a bit over the top compared to everything you've just said about Jason Momoa. But it was just it felt a little too, like, mustache twirling villain kind of thing.
I mean, I will say I preferred him over Patrick Wilson. I thought he was better than your... I completely contradict you on everything with this movie. I mean, he's still terrible. It's still a terrible character, but...
I don't even know how to go with this one. Anywhere a drag queen would have fit in this movie?
Yeah. So we already trashed the post-credit scene.
Yeah.
Instead of the post-credit scene we got, it should have been Nina as Ursula... Because Nina West is about to be Ursula.
Right.
And Ursula can be the villain in the next one. I mean, why the hell not?
Because
it would still be a better villain than anyone we've
had.
Because
Ursula would fit better in Marvel. You know, it's Disney.
Whatever. They can get the rights. But that's the only thing I could think of. I don't want to besmirch this terrible movie with the exquisite elegance of a drag queen.
I said, what if they had a drag queen... cast as one of the Fisher tribe, you know, the people with the tribe that actually fins and stuff.
That could have been cool.
Okay. See,
I was, yeah, there's lots of places they could have.
That just upped your rating by half, right?
No, absolutely not.
Do you even have a rating for this movie?
I do. And it actually
higher than zero.
You might be surprised by how high it is. I gave it a 1.5.
Okay. I am surprised at how high that is.
I know. I gave it a 1.5 because I don't know. I guess I was feeling a little guilty because I didn't go in expecting to hate it. And I guess I did. It's somewhat coherent in a way that the movies I've given a 1 to so far this year are not. And that's the nicest thing I think I can say about. And I do want to give some credit for being able to execute the underwater stuff better than I thought they could have.
Yeah. So
it set the groundwork for, like, now I want to see the live action Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
Cause I'm sure that's coming in a few years. And I think this very much set that as, like, if they do the Little Mermaid like this in terms of, like, how they execute that underwater dialogue and everything, I think that's a good template.
Yeah.
So there's half a point, half a reel.
Fair enough. There you go.
So there you go.
All right. What may shock you to no, it won't, that I went higher than you.
You love this movie. 4.5 reels from you.
4.75. Now I went 2.5 reels.
That's actually lower than I thought you were going to go. I thought you were going at least for 3.
That was my initial rating when I first came out, but then kind of
you
thinking.
Thought thoughts.
I thought thoughts. So I went 2.5 reels.
Okay.
Well, let's move on to Mary Poppins Returns.
Let's move on to Mary Poppins Returns.
Just so give people the quick dirty of this movie. So it is a direct sequel. It actually takes place decades after Mary Poppins' original visit. She's coming back now to the Banks house. Michael and Jane are adults now. Michael has kids, and so tough times in London town, and Mary Poppins has come back to try and help out again. So what were your initial thoughts on this one?
So let me say this. This was in my top 5 most anticipated.
Most anticipated, yeah.
We're talking about one of my least anticipated and now one of my most anticipated. I was a big fan of the original Mary Poppins.
Okay.
We had, I think I mentioned this before, but we had a VHS recorded copy of it that we recorded one time when it played on one of the network.
Yeah.
So when I was a kid, I would watch this movie and it always had the commercials. But I remember watching it a lot. The original, I wanted to watch it again before seeing this. I know you did.
I did.
So I'm interested to hear what you have to say about that. But I mean, I still remember so much about that original movie, even though it's been years and years since I've seen it. And I have nothing but fond memories of it, even though my memories of it are it being a very weird movie, somewhat disjointed movie, kind of all over the place movie, but in the most wonderful way. So I thought the degree of difficulty for this movie was extremely high, especially when it comes to Emily Blunt and her performance, trying to step into the shoes of, Julie Andrews to play this super iconic role.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, I loved it. I loved it so much. I had a very good time. I thought it was very lovely. I thought it was enchanting. I thought it paid homage in all the right ways to the original.
Yeah.
I thought it differed enough to be worthwhile, but I mean, I have to say that I think this movie is more meaningful to people who have a very deep appreciation for the original movie.
Right, that have that affinity for it.
If you hate the original or you don't get it or you never watched it, you won't feel those feelings for this one, probably.
Yeah.
You may like it on your own, but I gotta admit, a lot of the reason I love this movie is because of my love of the original. And I thought Emily Blunt just killed it.
Yeah, she did a great job.
So freaking good.
Yeah.
Did way better than what I thought she could have. And I think this role really establishes her as if she wasn't already established as like grade A top billed movie star. Like, she did enough to embody the character that Julie Andrews created on screen while also giving it her own special flair. Like, it's a different enough character where she's not doing an impression, but still true to what that character is. And I loved that about her and about this. So I left with a huge smile on my face.
Good.
And I may have teared up a couple times.
Aww.
Which I'll talk about later. But
okay.
Yeah, it was, I liked it a lot.
Good.
I liked it a whole lot.
I enjoyed it. Let me start by going into rewatching the original.
Yes.
Because I can't remember, like, I know as a kid I'd seen it maybe more than once, but I don't really recall seeing it as a whole. Like, I remember this part and this part. I don't know if I had seen it at different times, just parts, or if I ever saw the whole thing, but I don't remember it as a whole. So I'm glad I rewatched it, because there are things that get brought up in this one that make more sense having then seeing the original so recently. But it is weird.
Yeah.
And I think trying to digest it really for the first time fully as an adult, it didn't strike that same chord with me. Like, it's fun and I like the performances, but there are parts of the movie that I just felt like just really dragged.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt the same way about this one.
Yeah.
About Mary Poppins Returns. Like, I enjoyed it. I thought it was cute. It's an endearing movie. And I do think that it was very well done, and the goal of creating a true direct sequel, I think they accomplished very well.
Yes.
So I don't feel like I have to have loved it to have at least still say that I enjoyed it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So that's my initial thought on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the biggest thing with this, I mean, the original is a musical and has some very iconic music that people still recognize, even if they're not huge fans of the original movie. Did you have any thoughts about the music in this one?
I did not think that the music was as standout as the original songs. Like, you know, Chim Chimney and Spoonful of Sugar, like, even having not recalled the movie that much, I know those songs. Those are iconic. I didn't really feel there were any songs in this movie that felt like they were going to be iconic Mary Poppins songs.
Yeah, I think iconic is a strong word that I would not use for the songs in this movie. They were fun.
Yeah.
I liked them a lot. I liked the scene. I think seeing them on the screen and how they interact with what's happening in whatever scene that the song is being played in is probably better than just hearing it on a soundtrack.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Which isn't always true. I mean, Shallow from Star is Born this year, I heard many, many times before I actually saw the movie and loved that song, independent of how it played in the movie. I don't know if that would have been the case with any of the, I didn't listen to any of the Mary Poppins songs on purpose, actually, because I wanted to, I kind of had a feeling that the songs would mean more.
But it's different too, though, when you're taking songs from a movie about musicians to a musical.
Stop. No. It's the same. The songs mean that song in that movie and A Star Is Born is so integral to the plot of that movie, and what Shallow means for that movie means just as much, if not more, than any song in this movie meant for the movie.
Right, but it didn't. It's not a song that portrays like what's happening in the scene.
Yes, it does.
Well, I mean, come on. They're musicians on a stage performing the song. I mean, yes, it portrays what's going on in the movie and all that stuff. But in a musical, when you've got a song going on, a lot of times the song is iterating what's happening in the scene.
I don't know. I think you're getting way into the weeds with this. And getting away from what my point is, which is I don't think that the songs in this movie I would appreciate as much without them existing with the visual scenes they were a part of.
That's actually kind of what I was trying to.
No, it wasn't. You were saying that the song from that Shallow is not integral to that scene in that movie. And I think it very much is.
Okay, let's move on.
Anyway, but with that, I thought, can you imagine that? I loved that scene. I loved that song. I loved her performance of it. Emily Blunt's performance of it.
That was the one that I thought felt the closest to something that may have been in the original.
Yeah, that was fun. I liked, I don't know if this is the exact name of it, but A Cover Is Not the Book. I thought okay. I thought that was a fun number in the animated scene. I thought that was really cool.
When she took on a different accent.
And a different hairstyle.
Yeah.
That bob. I like the music. I didn't love the music in an iconic way. Like I'm not going to be singing these songs. And the gay in me always thinks, which of these songs are they going to play at show tunes on Sunday night at Union, which is a thing here at our local homosexual watering hole. Every Sunday night they have show tunes where they play songs from musicals and Broadway productions the entire night. I was like, which song are they going to play? And I don't know. I feel like, can you imagine that it may be that song? But I don't know. I don't think of any of them as that iconic.
Yeah.
I actually think I did not like The Greatest Showman. I didn't even make it through the entire movie. I didn't like it so much. But I thought the songs may have been a little more iconic.
Yeah, like I've still not seen the movie, but I've listened to the soundtrack, and more recently I've heard like the version where other artists like
Yeah, they just released, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's really good.
It's solid, very memorable, catchy songs that can be borderline iconic. I don't want to say anything about Greatest Showman as iconic because I hate that movie. But the songs are very catchy and stick with you and play very well in that kind of show tunes kind of setting. Whereas I don't know with these songs if any of them do necessarily, as much as I enjoyed them in the scenes they were in. So I enjoyed them in the context of the movie, but not necessarily outside of that as much.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Do you think if they do another one, they'll wait 50 years? Or do you think that that Emily Blunt and Lin-Manuel Miranda, do you think that there's a way for them to do another sequel?
Mike, there's always a way to do a sequel, but okay. I don't think they should. I think this should be it. I appreciate this movie so much for what it is, but the way this movie ends feels like such a great.
It felt ending. Like an end. Yeah.
Yes, and let's get into a little bit of spoiler territory, I guess.
Okay.
But with the fact that there's someone who was in the original movie who's now in his 90s.
Yeah.
I think that we're not going to have any more of the actors from the original for too much longer. Yeah. And I think that really was the perfect bow on the end of this movie.
Well, it was okay, so we're into spoilers now. Sure. Just okay, so everybody knows. Because I really liked the natural way that they were able to give Dick Van Dyke this cameo.
Yeah.
It's like, because he played that character in the original.
Well, no, he did not.
Well, he played one
he
of
played
those bankers,
that
right?
character's father.
Father, yeah.
In the original.
Yeah.
So now he's playing that character's son, who was played by someone else in the original.
But still.
But yes.
For him to naturally be now the age that that character would have actually been then,
right.
You know what I mean? And be able to bring that around full circle. I really appreciate that. And I think that's another way too, to say that like, this is where maybe the Mary Poppins story should end. Cause for one, it's not based on then the original author's books, you know, just the characters, which I don't know if the original movie was actually pulled from any of the stories that she told.
I think it was, but P.L. Travers, who wrote Mary Poppins and the Mary Poppins books, was notoriously very unhappy with the portrayal of Mary Poppins. She thought she was too
and they kind of
jovial
went into that,
and light and fun.
What's that movie, Saving Mr. Banks?
Yes. There's a movie about P.L. Travers and Walt Disney and getting the original Mary Poppins made. That's decent. It's a fine movie. But even that movie's kind of Disney-fied.
Yeah.
To make it more fun and light. But yeah, she was not very happy with this. And in fact, they had to wait until she died and her estate allowed Disney to make a sequel to Mary Poppins, because she famously refused after Mary Poppins was made to let Disney use the character again.
Gotcha.
So that's one of the reasons why it has taken so long for there to be a sequel, is because she was so unhappy with the movie that she refused to let Disney touch that character again.
Well, hypothetically, let's say it was they had been able to make a sequel and they did one either in the 70s or 80s or whatever. Do you think that there's anybody else that could have been cast from back then as Mary Poppins? Or do you think that, like, should they?
I don't know, but now you have me picturing Mary Poppins in the 80s with shoulder pads, and I am living and dying at the same time. It's terrible. Terrible. I'm so glad that didn't happen.
Yeah. I didn't necessarily mean that
it Michael Jackson
take place.
Song.
Okay.
Mary Poppins in the 80s.
But I wonder if, I mean, you know, 20 years later, could Julie Andrews have still done it if they had?
Probably.
If it was truly like took place 20 years. But I know Mary Poppins isn't supposed to age, but Julie Andrews still looks great.
Yeah.
She still looks great.
I'd fuck her.
Wow. I mean, sure. Star fucker. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that this should be a one and done sequel. Especially, I mean,
and it very much feels like it. It doesn't feel like it's trying to set up the Mary Poppins extended universe. You know, it's not trying. I don't feel like it's trying to do that. I think that they had a great idea for how to naturally bring this character back in a movie. It felt like a one and done, and I hope it is.
I want to see a prequel.
No.
Of the Balloon Lady.
Absolutely not.
No, maybe there is a story to be told about.
Well, apparently she is in the books.
Oh, really?
Apparently. I don't know.
I guess. Yeah. I believe it.
I don't read books, you know.
But right. But what about a prequel? Like, what if we were to find out that she had come and seen the original Mr. Banks when he was a kid?
No.
And he just
not.
Forgot.
No.
No.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
She visited the Banks when they were cave people, helping them to be able to create that fire for the first time and invent the wheel.
See, look how helpful she is.
No, God damn it. No.
Okay.
No.
I do think that the way that this story was set up was done very naturally. You know, so this takes place what is it, 20 years or so
something
later?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so Michael Banks, now he owns the house that
the kids in the original are now the adults.
Right.
The parents, we assume, are dead.
Yeah.
I don't know if they make direct mention of their being dead, but they're dead. And... yeah, it's essentially a rehash of the original story.
Right.
It's not.
They added an extra child
to make it super different.
One of the, I guess, the one and only maid that they have left, I guess, is supposed to be the same maid that was there.
Sure.
Because she recognized Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
I actually thought that, I'm not sure who the actress was that played Jane. But I thought that they did a good job finding someone that looked like she could be an adult version of what that kid looked like.
And see, I kind of recall what they looked like as kids. I don't think Ben Whishaw looks at all like Michael.
Did you know that he died at like 21 or something?
Oh yeah, he died
like
in the 70s.
Yeah, I, you know, while I was watching the original, I was just kind of looking up like, what happened to these people? Where are they now? And I was like, oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. What's funny is, there's so much time that spanned between the original movie and this movie. Like the kids, the actors who played the kids in the original movie are like, well, Michael's dead, but Jane is like my parents' age.
Yeah.
Like that's how long they're not even old enough to play a parent. They're old enough to play like grandparents now. Well, not Michael. He's dead. But
Jesus.
Well, I mean, he can't be a grandparent. He's
dead.
He's like super dead. But yeah, that's crazy to me. It's just how much time has more time has passed between the original movie and now than passed between the events of the original movie and the events of this movie, which is insane.
Yeah, that's crazy. Wow.
Yeah.
I
loved the inclusion of the Admiral next door.
Yes.
That throwback. Like, I thought the throwbacks they had, the direct throwbacks were really cute. I loved the kite and incorporating that in with the mom's suffrage sash still attached to it.
Vote, yeah.
I loved that. I thought all that was really cute and did a good job of for those of us who do think very fondly of the original, it very much tugged on those nostalgia strings. I thought that was the strength of the movie more than anything else. I think Emily Blunt was the strongest part of the movie for sure. And then that nostalgia factor was very there.
In no way is this a no, ma'am, or anything like that, but I didn't love Lin-Manuel Miranda's character.
Yeah, I was listening to this on another podcast, and because I was wondering why I didn't love him more, and I think they kind of spoke to it a little bit more, but Dick Van Dyke is so freaking talented and iconic. And I couldn't help but think when I was seeing Lin-Manuel Miranda on the screen, essentially playing the same character.
Right.
I mean, he's not very different from Bert from the original. I was thinking, is Lin-Manuel Miranda really like that iconic to where like in 50 years when they're making the sequel to this?
That they shouldn't make.
Mary Poppins Forever. If they follow the Batman version of titling movies.
Exactly.
that we're going to see 90-year-old Lin-Manuel Miranda and be like, whoa, Lin-Manuel Miranda. You know, or is he like kind of a flash in the pan? We're going to be like, oh, he was popular enough to be in that movie?
I think right now he's the song man.
And not to like downplay, like, I know Hamilton. I haven't seen Hamilton, but I know it's a big deal. I know that he's immensely talented. I'm not questioning that. I just don't know the longevity of his career. I mean, Dick Van Dyke, his career has spanned since like
numerous decades.
Invention of television almost.
Right. Yeah.
Through now.
I mean, he has outlived so many co-stars. Except Betty White, who's still around. God bless your soul.
So, I mean, he, Yeah. So I just don't know if Lin-Manuel Miranda, I wish they had chosen maybe someone a little more. I keep thinking of who, I don't know who I would
well,
put.
Well, see,
in
that's
that role,
the thing is like, I can't,
but like someone who is a little bit more that we're going to remember like, oh yeah. Like he, I think Emily Blunt is that type of person who's going to be yeah. around for a long time, but I don't know about him.
So
he
me,
may be,
maybe,
I may be wrong, but
like,
I don't know.
For me, I don't know if it's necessarily him in the role or just the role itself. Like, I'm not sure who I could have put in that role. I mean, the role was fine. It served a purpose. I think to me, it felt like that role was supposed to be more important than it ended up being in.
Yeah. I do like the fact that instead of him having some sort of romantic connection with Mary Poppins, kind of like Bert had in the original,
yeah.
that he was
crushing on Jane.
Yeah, I did like that a little bit. I thought that spin on the character and making him different in that way was good.
Is it bad that I was like, she's never gonna go for a lamplighter?
And really, like, what a lovely job. Like, no wonder you're just biking around the street singing songs. Your only job is to light lamps and then put them
then
out
put them
in
out,
the morning.
Turn, yeah.
What a life. I want to live that life. Oh my gosh. What kind of qualifications do you have to have for that job? What's the interview like?
Can you light a match?
Hey.
Can you stand on a ladder?
Yeah, exactly. What's your formal education?
Can you ride a bike?
My God. What a charmed life. And how many lamplighters does one city need? They had that musical number where there were like 80 of them.
Right.
And I was like, how many do you need? What? This can't be like a 10-man operation. I know London's a big city, but really, like, how long does it take?
How you feeling?
Wonderful. When, what, why?
do you want to get to takes? Or,
yeah, sure.
Or okay.
We can take it away.
Take it away? You want me to start this round?
Yeah, what's your gayest take on Mary Poppins Returns?
Do you think that Admiral Boom and
absolutely. You mean his life partner?
Yes,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's just say that's not the only thing that goes boom in that household.
Right. That is not the only cannon that gets lit.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's lighting his cannon every night.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
They've been around a...
They've been together.
They've crossed
for a
the
while.
Ocean a couple times together.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He got all up in his coral reef.
What's kind of funny is I kind of thought that, like, watching the original, and then when they were both back in this one, I was like, oh, great. I get to use that as my gayest
take.
That
old gay couple.
Right?
I actually didn't use that because I thought you might use
really?
That.
That's funny.
But I definitely thought that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a couple of kind of gay takes. One is that I was sad at how poorly lit the one scene with all the lamplighter dancers was, because I feel like a lot of them are probably super cute gay dancers.
You're probably right. Absolutely.
I wanted to see their faces. And the one who for some reason got highlighted and we saw his face a lot was not very cute.
Bring the guys from the back up front.
Yeah, show me some of those cute guys. I don't need access lighting in the Mary Poppins movie.
For some reason, I thought your gayest take was just going to be that it's a Mary Poppins movie. It's all gay.
I mean, yeah. But my other gayest take, another character I think might be on the homosexual side, her umbrella. Her little umbrella
pellet.
Oh, yeah. He's a little sassy gay
that
thing,
little sassy
he?
Parrot handle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a little sass in him. I think he might be family. And, you know, I hope someday he meets the cane of his dreams.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
He needs to be put onto an umbrella with a rainbow parasol.
Oh, yes. Well, in the modern day, when being homosexual is more accepted, he would be.
That's funny. That's a good one.
I'm me now. Yep, that would be him. Yep, totally. Okay. What about your shadiest take?
Okay, so my shadiest take is that at 2 hours and 10 minutes, it's not super long.
Stop.
Listen to me. It's it's too long to keep kids' attention. In the theater that I was in, it was Saturday afternoon, filled with children. Those kids were literally running up and down the aisles. There was like a 6-year-old girl sitting next to me, bouncing up and down on the seat. These kids were losing their attention. The movie was losing their attention. And so I did check. The original was actually 9 minutes longer. But in 1964, a lot of the theaters were doing intermission halfway through the movie too. So that's all I'm saying, is that I felt like for a kid's movie, it was a little long.
Well, as you know, and as anyone who listens to the show faithfully knows, I care not at all about children or their tastes in anything.
But you do care about length.
Sometimes. It's not the length. It's, you know, just how it makes you feel at the end of it. But I feel like Aquaman was more endlessly long and interminably exhausting than this was, by far.
I mean, it was technically actually longer.
Yes, in that it was longer. But yeah, my shadiest take, going back to Aquaman. So I left this movie and I was very confused. I thought, because there were a couple times, especially towards the end, where I was like, I feel like Julie Andrews is about to pop up. Have they kept this from us? Is she going to pop up? I thought she was a couple times. And then she didn't. And so I left this movie very confused. So I hopped on the Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
And I looked to see if Julie Andrews was dead. Because that was my first thought. Was, okay, maybe Julie Andrews is dead. And that's why she's not in this. And nope, she's alive. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe she's in one of those states where she's like incapable because of old age. She just isn't really able to perform. And then I saw her most recent credit is in Aquaman playing a big fucking octopus creature. And I thought, why was Julie Andrews too good to make an appearance in this movie, but she could play that slug monster in Aquaman? And it makes me think, I bet that balloon lady was supposed to be Julie Andrews. Like, it just reeks of it. That was supposed to be where she makes an appearance, a surprise appearance that you just don't expect. And it's such a magical moment. And I love Julie Andrews, but damn you for not giving us that. Why did you choose slug creature grossness helping smelly Jason Momoa get a trident? Oh, which should have been a stick of gum because of how smelly he is. Jesus. Instead of an actual spoon, spork. Then be the sweet little balloon lady who steals the, why did you give that moment to Angela Lansbury? Who's also a treasure. Like, that should have been Julie Andrews's moment. That would have been that would have been the perfect bow on the
She
end of
had
this movie.
Specifically said she did not want to do a cameo in this movie because she did not want to take that spotlight away from Emily Blunt.
I don't know. I think that would have been so perfect, and it wouldn't have taken anything away from Emily Blunt. I thought that would have been, especially if you have that moment where like Emily Blunt as Mary Poppins gives that knowing like look to her.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that, I think that would have been such a beautiful,
I mean, I agree with you.
Perfect moment.
And in fact, and I even kind of thought the same thing when I saw Angela Lansbury there, just thinking, like, I wasn't expecting it to be Julie Andrews, but just that would have been a good spot for her to have a cameo.
Yeah.
I mean, her intentions for not being in the movie were,
I don't know.
I
don't know.
Because they did ask her.
I know. And I think that was a bad choice. I think it was. I think she should have been there. I think that should have been her in that spot. I love Angela Lansbury.
Maybe it's because she still looks too young.
But there are even parts where Emily Blunt was like looking at her reflection at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Where I thought maybe she would like see Julie Andrews or something. I thought that would have been a little too on the nose. I think the balloon lady though, that like perfect spot, like that should have been her. I really wish it would have. Or at least, like, give your voice to, like, one of the animated creatures. Like, something. Like,
she did.
Not in Aquaman. In this. Get, like, really, there's nothing you could have contributed to this movie. That it very much disappoints me. Yeah. I especially bringing Dick Van Dyke back and him being a part of it. I really wish she had done something. It made me a little sad. It soured me a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
I get that.
Anyway, let's get back to the positive.
Yeah.
Who's your slay?
Do either of us have anybody different than Emily Blunt?
I actually do.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, shit. Well, I said Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
For very many obvious reasons. So let's hear yours.
Well, I mean, let's not get away from Emily Blunt too quickly.
Okay. Like,
I've already said a lot of great things, but I will say this. She needs to get an Academy Award nomination for this performance. I thought it was an almost impossible task that she was given, and she did it better than I think I could have even imagined. It was a beautiful, perfect portrayal of this iconic character in mm-hmm. a way that, I mean, I think it's almost unfair to ask someone to play Mary Poppins again, but she did it in an amazing way. So, wow. And she has now done comedies, she's done dramas, she's done sci-fi, she's done horror, she's done musical, Disney musical. I mean, what can't Emily Blunt do? She's a treasure.
Right.
Now, having said that, I'm going to give my slay to Dick Van Dyke and Angela Lansbury.
Because okay.
the moments they were on screen, I don't know. That's the moment where the nostalgia really got to me. And I was like tearing up. And especially seeing Dick Van Dyke get on that desk and do his little dance. Wow. I mean, the man's 93 years old. And Angela Lansbury is also 93 years old. And seeing them on screen and seeing that just sparkle still in their eyes
yeah.
at that age, like, it melted my heart.
Oh, yeah, really, it's awesome. Did.
It was beautiful. I loved it. And as amazing as Emily Blunt is, just that icing on the cake of seeing the two of them. I know Angela Lansbury isn't really connected to the original Mary Poppins, but I mean,
but still seeing her. She's a treasure. And
yeah, I
was going to say American treasure, but she's British.
Yeah, right. I don't know. It just moved me a lot. And
yeah.
I loved it. And I think Emily Blunt's getting a lot of love for it. But so that's why I wanted to give my slay to them. Because, I mean, real talk, they're 93. How many times am I going to get to say they're my slay?
There you go. Fair point.
It was very moving and beautiful and very well done. So I loved it. I almost wish that they hadn't spoiled that Dick Van Dyke was in the movie in the trailer.
Yeah.
I thought it would have been even more had we not seen that. But still,
yeah,
still loved it.
So I think you're going to hate me for the rest of my life when I give my no, ma'am. So I'm going to let you go first on that one.
No, you go first.
Okay.
Okay.
Meryl Streep.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me more.
I thought that her part was kind of boring. I didn't like her accent. And to be honest, I started falling asleep during that part. I just thought that was probably the least Meryl Streep role that I've seen Meryl Streep do in quite a while.
Okay. So. Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you this. Meryl Streep is a national treasure. She is an Academy Award winning performer, and every role she does on screen gets nominated for an Academy Award. She's a treasure. The last time she was on screen with Emily Blunt was playing Miranda Priestly in The Devil Wears Prada. And seeing them together on screen is all you've ever wanted since seeing that movie. I can't believe that you would just throw her under the bus like that.
Oh my God. She's your no ma'am.
And having said that, she is my no ma'am. Her scene was boring. I hated her accent. And while I didn't fall asleep, I probably should have. That was terrible. I hated that.
Oh my God. I cannot believe this moment right now.
I hated, That was such a waste. I mean,
I've never been so happy to hear you're No Ma'am.
And she's won an Academy Award for playing a British person before.
Right.
Why not just have her play a British person again? That Russian accent. What was
right. She's
that?
Supposed to be Mary Poppins' cousin, but twice removed or whatever the fuck she said. But
I hated that. I thought it was terrible. I didn't like the whole gimmick of her house turning upside down.
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was off-putting. It was weird. The song was kind of
right.
Stupid. I didn't like it. It was bad. It that scene more than anything else really took me out of the movie. It was not good. It was not good at all.
Now, is this at all one of those kinds of things where would it have been more acceptable if it wasn't somebody as high profile as Meryl Streep doing that role?
No, the role was bad.
It was, but would you have disliked it as much?
Yeah, I absolutely would have. That whoever was in that role, if they do it the exact same way, same accent, same gimmick, same song, would have been my No Ma'am, because the nature of that was so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it actually would have been even worse had it been someone not as talented.
Probably.
As Meryl
I guess
Streep.
That's fair. Yeah.
So if you replace Meryl Streep with someone even worse, yeah, they're still going to be my No Ma'am. I think there's ways you could have made that role better. I mean, even keep the gimmick. I don't care. Keep the upside down house. Just give Meryl Streep a different accent. Make the song a little better.
Make the song better, yeah.
Do other things to enhance that role. But it completely takes you out of the movie. And it's a waste of that amount of time. So, yeah, I did not like it. And the bowl that they crack ends up really not being that important in the end. They find out in that scene that it's worthless.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a pointless scene. And took away from the quality of the movie.
Yeah.
And I hate to say that about Meryl. I love you, Meryl. I'm sorry. I know you're a faithful listener. But I didn't like it. It's bad.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, with that, where would a drag queen fit into this movie? So I will tell you what I just said, that any of the fantasy places that Mary Poppins took the kids.
Okay.
There could have been a way to incorporate a drag queen into any of that.
Well, yeah, sure.
Whether it be a drag queen cast as a role or doing a voice, even, you know, having a famous drag queen do one of the voices or something like that.
Well, they had to keep their PG rating, Mike.
Oh, come on. I didn't mean do it like drag. What's that cartoon?
Super Drag.
Super Drag.
Yeah. Well, mine, actually, speaking of the Meryl Streep role, I thought that could have been a drag queen. Like, if you're going to make it a super campy, stupid
okay.
role, why not give it to a drag
sure.
queen? And, I mean, Mary's supposed to be an odd character, and her family are always odd people, and who's more odd than a drag queen?
Right?
And just the inquisitive looks from the children would have been wonderful.
That totally could have worked. I like that.
Yeah, I think that could have been a fun role for, you know, instead of drudging Meryl Streep out to play this terrible Russian troll.
Yeah.
Get some, you know, drag queen to do it. They would have been honored for the privilege.
Honored.
Absolutely honored. Anyway, that's where a drag queen would have fit into this one.
Well, let's rate it.
Let's rate it. What did you rate this one?
I gave it 3.5 reels.
Wow, that's actually higher than I thought you were going to go.
So let me tell you, it's kind of funny because when I was working on this, I did actually kind of mess around with my ratings a little bit. And initially I had this as a 3 reels. But
initially you had this movie and Aquaman on the same level.
I did.
That boggles the mind.
That's why I try to take the time and think through my notes before we talk about them.
That's wise.
Yeah.
That's wise.
But here's why I ended up bumping it up a half. Like I said, I didn't love the movie. I did enjoy it though. And one thing that'll get a good rating for me is if I feel like the film that was made was the film that the director intended to, like, if I feel like this movie was the movie that was, that the filmmakers were intending to put out. You know, sometimes it's like, you can tell that somebody's making a movie and what ended up being on the screen wasn't exactly what they wanted. And the iconicness of the character, the performance that Emily Blunt gave, and just the spectacle of it. Like, that's the other thing that will, like, a 3 versus a 3.5 to me sometimes is the difference of would I recommend you seeing it on the big screen or not.
Sure.
And this is definitely a movie that it's, I think that you will take a little bit more out of it by seeing it on the big screen.
Okay. Cool. Good rating.
Okay.
I had the same rating. I gave it a 3.5 reels. First, slightly
different. I honestly expect you to go 4 reels with this.
You know, there was part of me that was tempted, but then the thing that anchored me a little bit was realizing how much my own nostalgia and my own, you know, feelings for the original film played into me liking this film. If I didn't have that, it would probably be a 3 for me, but really, I mean, it's my love of the original that gives it that 3.5. And getting to your point about the filmmaker, I mean, Rob Marshall, who directed this movie, I think his skill is really just bringing out the best of the material he's already given. So with Chicago is a solid movie, but really just brings out the best of that musical. Mm-hmm. Into the Woods, I didn't like as much, but it really does bring out the essence of the play in a theatrical way.
Right.
And what he does with this is he brings out the essence of what made Mary Poppins great and translate it into modern day and put it onto the screen with not much creativity or originality, but enough of that nostalgia to tug at those heartstrings for me. He's very much the Ron Howard of musicals. When you're wanting to play it safe with a big property, go for, and it's a musical, go for Rob Marshall, because yeah, he will put together something that is very pleasing for mass audiences. And that's what I think this movie is. But for me, it's elevated a little bit because it does a really great job of paying homage to the original. And Emily Blunt alone elevates this movie with that amazing performance.
Yeah.
So I'll give it 3.5. I had to stop short of 4 reels because I look at the movies I gave 4 reels to this year, and they all have some sense of real creativity and the filmmakers really going for it and doing something maybe a little more risky, a little more out there, a little more creative that this movie lacked. But this movie had everything I probably could have wanted this movie to have. So I really enjoyed it. And I think anyone who has a soft spot or a love for the original Mary Poppins should like this movie. They may not, because it is so close to the original, and I think that's what a lot of the critics who have not given it positive ratings have said, is that it doesn't live up to the original. But I mean, there's always going to be those people who say that,
right? And like, I'm one of those people where, just bring Star Wars back into this, you know, a lot of people say the same thing about, like, if you loved A New Hope so much, you might not like The Force Awakens as much because of how much they
plays on those
same beats. So I get that, why somebody might say that about this movie.
Yeah, but I like that. I appreciate that. I think there's a place in the world for that, for recreating things you love. I mean, it's fine, and I like it, and I appreciate it for what it is. And I think this movie does probably the best version of that we could have gotten. So I enjoyed it. I liked it. I loved it, really. And I will say that anyone who loved the original, I hope you love this one too.
There you go. All right. Well, we're on to
recommendations.
Let's go ahead and move on to recommendations.
What do you recommend, Mike?
Here's what I'm recommending this week. I'm going to double down on Dumplin' with Dolly.
What?
I said I'm going to double down on Dumplin' with Dolly.
Okay. So, you're going to recommend the same thing you recommended last week?
No, I'm recommending the soundtrack.
Oh, God.
I told you I didn't get a chance to do much else than watch the movies that we saw, but I did get a chance to listen to the soundtrack to Dumplin', and Dolly recorded some new music for the soundtrack. It's not just her greatest hits. And in fact, even the songs that were like her greatest hits, she re-recorded and had like Miranda Lambert and some other people like sing them with her. But she has a new song on there called Girl in the Movies. And she wrote it with Linda Perry from Four Non Blondes. And do you know who she is?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, well, Linda Perry is married to Sarah Gilbert from Roseanne and The View.
Okay.
So Dolly wrote a new song with a lesbian for this movie, and I just it's a good soundtrack, and I like the new music on there, and it's out on Apple Music, probably Spotify too. So if you like Dolly, I'd say check out the soundtrack.
Check it out.
Double down on Dumplin'.
Okay. How long did it take you to come up with that?
Pretty quick, actually.
Okay. Well, I also haven't had time to consume much content with it being crazy holiday times, right, and everything. But what I have consumed a lot of is something very local to Columbus that I'm going to recommend. I love Cheryl's Cookies so much. And that, really, with all my holiday shopping and everything lately, whenever I go to Easton, I stop by Cheryl's. I get me a couple cookies. I've gone by. There's one near my house off of Lane Avenue that I go to. I've gotten them as gifts for people. It makes a lovely gift. I know we're past the holiday season now, but if you ever need a gift for someone, getting some Cheryl's Cookies is always a great little gift. They're so good. I really like the mocha chocolate chip cookie. It's delicious. And they always do some holiday ones. I got some for my family for Christmas. And Christmas has already happened, right? So yeah, they've enjoyed them.
Exactly, right?
They love them. It's great. I haven't eaten them all, I'm sure. But yeah, so it's super local, but if you ever are in Columbus, I know a lot of people talk about Jenny's ice cream because it's iconic and lovely and wonderful. And I love Jenny's and her ice cream, but Cheryl's Cookies also a great local treat.
Cheryl's Cookies now is owned by 1-800-Flowers. So they've gone national.
It? Oh, they have.
Yeah.
Oh, get it.
In fact, Cheryl and company is suing Cheryl Krueger.
What?
Yeah. Because, Cheryl has a new cookie shop in the short north called C. Krueger's Cookies.
Oh,
and they're suing her because the way her little icing twirl looks and stuff, and the recipes are very similar to the Cheryl's Cookies.
Oh.
And she's not supposed to be doing that, apparently.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. They still have helped me very much emotionally, and I'm starting the Whole 30 in the new year with a friend, for 30 days where you basically just forage the forest for twigs and berries, and that's all you can eat. So these cookies are really,
I do like twigs and berries.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. So these cookies have gotten me through some rough times, and I'm going to miss them tremendously when I have to give up all the good things in the world starting in the new year.
Yeah. Well, speaking of New Year, so Christmas is over, but New Year's is just around the corner.
Sure is.
Any fun plans for New Year's Eve?
No. I have to work a lot.
I'm sorry.
Around that time, as always.
I'm sorry.
Well, that was the deal I made with the devil. I got to go spend Christmas with my family. And so since I got to do that, I am working all around the new year. But I do have a cabin weekend with the best friends planned the weekend after New Year's.
There you go.
That's what I have to look forward to.
Nice.
Yeah, that's how I'll be ringing in 2019. But look out pretty soon. We will be talking. We're nearing the end of 2018. We're going to be talking the highlights of 2018 pretty soon. So look out for that episode.
That's right. Right. Is this our last episode of
2018? No.
Okay. We do have
one. We still have to talk about Vice.
That's right.
I may talk about Holmes and Watson as much as you don't want to, but
you are welcome to.
We will both talk about Vice.
Yeah.
Soon. That's, I think, the last big movie we gotta review before we can call 2018 a wrap.
Okay. All right. Well, I tell you what, speaking of a wrap, let's wrap this episode up.
Oh, I didn't bring. Oh, you mean just the episode. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. We're gonna wrap it up.
Don't you ever do that again.
If you haven't already, become a real friend. Follow us on Twitter.
I'm so sorry for what Mike just did. His views do not represent the views of half of the Real Gay Movie Show.
Follow us on Twitter at Real Gay.
Any complaints can be sent to care of Mike Lovins.
And Instagram at Real Gay Movie Show.
At M Lovins on Instagram.
What is my Instagram?
I think it might just be at M Lovins.
It might be. No, I think it's at Mike Lovins.
Is it?
Don't look me up.
At him.
At me. Don't at me. Like our page on Facebook. Wherever you listen, iTunes, Stitcher, Google, Spotify, please subscribe and give us some feedback. You can also send us questions and comments to realgaymovieshow@gmail.com. So, Ryan?
Yeah.
That's it for this week.
Yeah.
Have a real gay day.